Welcome to All About Art. My name is Alexandra, and I'm an art historian, curator, and writer. Within this podcast, topics relating to art history, cultural policy, the art sector, as well as a large range of other art-related topics will be covered. Conducting critical discussions, having entertaining exchanges, or just enjoying some relaxing chats? All About Art is where you'll find it all. Join me in exploring and developing cultural discourse. Welcome to another episode of All About Art. In this episode, I speak to Laurel Johannesson, a Canada-born artist who examines various psychological states of being using the beach or shoreline as a liminal space in her photographs and moving image. Laurel studied at the University of Calgary, the University of Saskatchewan, and the Royal College of Art in London. Listen in to hear me ask her about her practice and how she works in a variety of mediums. We talk about her inspiration and the themes present within her practice, along with a more recent series she started in 2020. We also touch on her role as a professor and how other professional experiences have shaped her career as an artist. This episode is in collaboration with Art Pow Her Contemporary, a collaborative art project initiative that places focus on female-identifying and non-binary creatives in the arts. The CEO, Anna Morass, founded Art Pow Her with the aim of raising awareness about gender stereotypes and gender inequality while inspiring change through creativity and collaborations. Thank you, Laurel, for coming on the podcast and to Art Pow Her Contemporary for the collaboration. Before I dive in, I wanted to let you lovely listeners know that All About Art is on Patreon. So if you want some behind-the-scenes content, maybe a bit of merch, the chance to get one-on-ones with me and my guests, or you're simply wanting to support this project, I would be absolutely thrilled if you decided to sign up. You can do so through the link in the show notes. I also wanted to say thank you to those who have already signed up. Your support means the world, and it makes the further production, improvement, and growth of the podcast possible. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful. And now, on to the interview. Hi, Laurel. Thank you so much for sitting down with me today. I am going to dive right into my very first question. I'd like to start off with giving listeners a better idea of your education and your background. You went to university in Canada and in the UK, as well as attended the American Academy in Rome, and you've done other residencies in Iceland, Greece, and the south of France. Can you tell me and our listeners more about that and your background?
Yes, that's correct. I studied fine art at university, doing an MFA specializing in printmaking and digital media, and much later a PhD candidacy in computational media design at the University of Calgary. And my undergraduate studies, which included a BA and a BFA, were at the University of Saskatchewan in Canada. And I was also fortunate to attend the Royal College of Art in London during my master's studies, which was an incredible experience. As you mentioned, I've twice had the great honor to be a visiting artist and scholar at the American Academy in Rome, which is an unusual experience for a Canadian to be invited, and an invited artist in residence in Iceland at the Association of Icelandic Visual Artists, and in Italy at three different places, well, I guess four actually, the Bau Institute in Otranto and Spiazzi in Venice, and in Greece at the Skopelos Foundation for the Arts and Apotheke Arts Center on the island of Paros in Greece, and also at the Ionian Center for the Arts in Kefalonia. Where else? Also in the south of France at Air Valeries. And in 2017, I was invited artist in residence at Palazzo Monti in Brescia, Italy. And I've had the really unusual experience of being a reader and researcher at the Vatican Library, which is highly recommend to anyone who wants a very Harry Potter experience.
Wow, that sounds absolutely phenomenal and very international. And I know that you and I are going to speak a little bit more about these experiences later on. But first, I want to talk about your work in itself, because you work in a variety of mediums, as your practice encompasses photography, digital collage, and painting, and you're particularly interested in the beach as a liminal space, along with the intersection of art and technology. when I was researching for this episode, I saw that this interest for you comes after many years of practicing underwater photography, and you take inspiration coming from how we perceive time as suspended when underwater. You also look at themes of our body's relationship to the cosmos, our movements in connection with the earth, and our experiences of time passing. These themes are all present within your art. So I would love to hear more about how these themes developed in your practice.
First of all, I explore physical tension and the psyche through photographic based still and moving image collages that alter coastlines and beaches into limbo-like spaces. And my work often takes place in or around water in site-specific locations, and I try to depict uncanny juxtapositions between body and nature, or realism and dream. A large part of my practice is devoted to documenting and altering landscapes that seemingly exist beyond the scope of reality, and I'm often searching out places that kind of have that feeling. I'm interested in philosophies of temporality and the contemporary interpretations of those philosophies, and I'm inspired by the invisible world and inner landscapes, spaces where time is stretched to infinity and where delicate shifts of light can create an eternity, or where sound goes beyond hearing. Although I have a background in printmaking and painting and drawing, which could seem somewhat traditional artistic pursuits, I've always been really attracted to technology. And early on, that technology came in the form of SLR cameras and photo-based print techniques. However, when I first started utilizing a computer in my work, which was just before I went to the Royal College of Art, I felt that I was close to having all the tools that I needed to realize the images that lived in my head. My interest in philosophies of temporality and my research in that area feeds my approach to image making from the technical and conceptual to the theoretical. I suppose my initial research into the philosophies of temporality began in 2008 when I began creating interactive and generative works alongside my digitally manipulated photographic still images. An example is a work called Respiro, which was a small set of display screens that, through a generative code algorithm, created an inexhaustible number of image permutations and narratives based on randomness and duration. Another example was an interactive video painting that operated on a generative evolutionary code that allowed audience interaction through a tablet or a smartphone app. And the audience or the viewers could create their own environment by moving around an underwater video clip, the video leaving a trail or evolutionary history in its wake. Each resulting painting could not be duplicated again, as the brush had constantly evolved and changed. It never could be repeated. These interactive generative works provided me with an opportunity to become familiar with working with code and to put into practice some of the forms of viewer interaction. However, I was really, I was never really satisfied with this work, and I was often frustrated by what I felt was a limitation of generative art and interactive installation. While the primitive forms of self-generative systems, a wind chime as an example, easily maintain their lyrical quality, I felt that as soon as I attempted to bring in any interactive aspect to the work, it often became really mechanical in appearance and destroyed any subtleties or elements of aesthetic emotion. So I decided that in addition to advancing my technical skills, I would also begin researching aspects of time that would inform the work more thoroughly and help to kind of sort out my misgivings about it. After a great deal of research into both the technical aspects of generative interactive work and the philosophical aspects of temporality, I started to create more subtly ubiquitous experiences for the viewer with works like Hypnos, which consists of about 6,500 photographs taken at 2-second intervals to create a moving image of a night sky with a tiny sliver of active land and water at the bottom. The compiled photographs are then overpainted to create the shift in light and texture. So the themes of our body's relationship to the cosmos and our movements in connection with the earth and our experiences of time passing have been very much a part of my thought process in the work.
This is incredibly amazing to hear you speak about all of these different ways in which you have brought these themes into your work, because I mean, you have already begun to answer my next question, which is, How do you present all of these themes differently through your different mediums? So through interactive generative technologies that created the environment that people could really, within the name, interact with when, I need to stop using the word interact, when encountering your work. And I would love to hear more also about when it comes to photography or painting. And you were saying that you took photographs, what was it, 6,500?
Yes. Yeah.
And then painted over
in the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night. I would just love to hear a little bit more about how you present these themes differently through your variety of mediums.
Sure. So the research into temporality not only added to the development of the concept for some of the interactive generative works, but also started me thinking philosophically about temporal or liminal spaces. And as you mentioned, I started photographing the beach after many years of underwater photography. And for a long time, I was totally focused on the water and the perception of suspended time when you're underwater. However, over the years, I began to notice people at the seaside and how they stare at the water, seemingly mesmerized. There's often something in their posture and expression that conveys longing, or that I interpret as longing, for something unreachable or unknowable. And all of my observations at the shoreline started me thinking further about temporality and how our bodies are the source of how we perceive an environment. Since our bodies are unable to be in two places simultaneously, this corporeal dependency contributes to our understanding of a place being spatially or temporally singular. As the day progresses, our bodies align with the movement of the earth. If we don't experience the light of morning or the shadow of night, our experience of time is really lost. It is this this kind of in-between or liminal space of lost time that I'm interested in exploring. So sun on the waves or stars in the sky, where we can experience being in two places at the same time, or perhaps it's two different times in the same place. I'm interested in creating a sense of the uncanny, places that look familiar but are strangely foreign. And these ideas, which were initially explored to help me understand my generative works, are now present throughout the pictorial content of my still and moving images. The moving images certainly offer more opportunities to play with time and light and the movement of the cosmos in relationship to the body and land. However, to me, I'm always thinking of these ideas, and no matter the medium, and that that really comes into how I'm using paint to describe light in some of the overlays with some of the still images, or in different ways that I'm combining the mediums together to kind of create that atmosphere.
I really would love to talk more about this and your creative process a little bit later, but I just want to take a quick detour because I would love to ask a question about your current job as you're a professor at Alberta University of the Arts, with your research areas covering, similar to your themes within your practice, temporality, the moving image, interactivity, and generative art. Can you tell me more about your role and maybe touch on something that you have learned throughout your time as a professor?
I'm a full professor at AU Arts, and over the years I've taught students in the drawing and print media programs. Quite often our drawing students are working in a wide range of media, and that could include things like photography or digital media, or the drawing students have a very wide range of work that they're making and think very conceptually about things. I've also held administrative positions, including assistant dean, program head, and associate chair. And as far as something that I've learned throughout my time as a professor, I think I'd have to say the most important thing is to stay current as a professor and instructor. Keep making your work, keep researching, keep learning, look at work, and look at a lot of work, including work that might not have anything to do with your own artistic research or interests. You need to do all of this to retain your own identity as an artist and a person, but equally important to remain relevant to the students. On any given day, I can end up talking with students about a wide range of topics in their work, anything from really, organized religion to extraterrestrials, from environmental issues to struggles with cultural or gender identity, and from social media to fashion and politics and more. So really staying current, just in the art world, and then, the world in general, so that you can actually have some relevancy to the students and then also to yourself. It helps to move your own work forward.
I absolutely love that piece of advice because I think that that's something that, at least for me, I would not have thought that that answer would have come when I asked you that question. And I think that that's a really good thing to keep in mind, honestly, for anybody, but especially for people who are having an impact on the next generations and people within education. And I think that's absolutely wonderful.
And thanks.
What other professional experiences, such as maybe residencies or teaching opportunities, would you say have had a lasting impact on your career? I ask this in case any young artists are listening who may find that information useful.
Well, certainly each of my residency experiences has had an effect on my work and each has had a lasting impact. When I'm at a residency, I kind of give myself over to the place and let it wash over me and take hold. Sometimes the magnitude of its influence isn't revealed until long after it's over. For instance, in 2005, I was an artist in residence in Skopelos in the Sporides in the northern part of the Aegean in Greece. And I gone there with an idea for the underwater series that was eventually entitled Metamorphosis. And when I say I went there with an idea for it, I didn't really know if it was going to work, but I hoped it would. And then immediately after finishing the residency and leaving Greece, I was straight away into a residency at SIM, or the Association of Icelandic Visual Artists in Reykjavik in Iceland. And I didn't really know what Iceland would hold for my work, but I went there in search of a connection to my ancestral homeland. And before I made any work there, I spent weeks really exploring the landscape and the shorelines and lagoons and the neighboring island of Vidé, which is a very interesting place. It's kind of uninhabited, really, and has a lot of art actually on the island. And, but you can go there, on a little boat and, you get dropped off in the morning and you stay until the boat comes back to get you later in the afternoon or in the evening. And it's a very kind of solitary experience. I think there were like three other people on the island with me that day. So it was very strange. Anyway, I immersed myself in the place, in the music of the place as well, which is very distinctive. And I sought out solitary experiences to kind of find my ancestral roots and perhaps most importantly, my primordial connection to water. And that transformative summer in Iceland was a metaphysical and often psychological experience that has shaped and influenced my work ever since. That year, I was still very involved with the imagery that I was making underwater. However, I was starting to notice that I was becoming more and more interested in what was happening on the shoreline, the liminal space of the beach and the solitude and vastness of the spaces. The light in Iceland added another aspect to those thoughts, and Iceland plays with your concept of time, nighttime that appears to be daytime and daytime that masquerades as night. Time in Iceland is a really strange thing, and I can see now that my experiences there have colored the way I think about temporality and the way I construct an image today. I think that the time that I spent there has led me to the ideas that I explore now in series like The Oblivion Seekers and Situations. The series that I made in Iceland that year is entitled Wake, and it'll be shown for the first time this October and November with Art Power Contemporary.
All I can say to that right now is just, wow. I was listening to you speak and I was just thinking about the way that you explain how that place and how that experience in that place has impacted your work is phenomenal. And how the way that the geography and the way that, again, with this connection that humans have to Earth and how we perceive time, how we perceive day and night and how that has an effect on us. I think that that's marvelous. And of course, having researched your work a little bit before this episode and looking into that, now when you tell me about how the light in Iceland has really impacted your work from then on, I feel like I'm looking at it a little bit with new eyes and thinking about that kind of geographical space that has become almost a liminal space, or has always existed as a liminal space, day and night, or the beach and the light and the stars. But also when it comes to how you created these works, I would love to hear more about your Wake series and what the process of creation was like from a practical point of view, because you photographed yourself, right?
Yes, I photographed myself. The work that I made that year in Greece and Iceland was very much about searching for a personal connection to those two places. So it was important for me to have a very solitary experience in the specific locations that I chose. I was kind of using the water and its ecosystem as a way of camouflaging the figurative self. I was hiding myself in a skin that mimicked the surrounding moss and sand and rock and reflections and refracted depths. On some level, I was probably looking to be kind of swallowed up by these two places. Of course, these choices were not without their practical and technical challenges, not least of which was the weather and roughness of the water. I was on more than one occasion thrown against some adjacent rocks. I ended up with a lot of bruises and scrapes. I was sometimes photographing from a fixed point on land and other times with the camera underwater tied down to weights or suspended on a float. It was kind of a logistical nightmare, really. Each shot was carefully considered and planned out in regard to the light and the weather conditions and accessibility or distractions by others. But water and the weather are mercurial, to say the least. And so it was always an adventure.
Wow. The effort that goes into that. And I mean, of course, the effort that goes into art creation in general, but wow, as you say, logistical nightmare, but it has created some phenomenal pieces.
You know, everything was on a timer, of course. And so sometimes to get everything in place and then get myself in place to be there in time for the timer was, you know, a bit of a scramble.
I would also love to hear more about Situations, which is a series you started in 2020 that explores the various psychological states of being, using the beach or shoreline as a temporal space where transformation occurs. Again, very much the beach as a liminal space, one of the wonderful themes that is recurring in your works. And it's also something we touched on earlier that's incredibly important in your practice. The figures in your works are situated in natural settings that you have photographed in remote and mystically charged locations in Greece. There's a wonderful video about you and also about this work on Art Powher's website. And for anyone listening, I'm going to link it in the show notes for listeners to watch as well. But I would love to talk more about this series. And similar to Wake, I would love to know how you went about producing it as well.
Well, I just completed the Oblivion Seekers series when the pandemic began. Initially, not being able to travel affected my production, and I was worried about what was next for the work. Unable to add to my archive of base images, I became more reliant on my existing archive. And I had to mine that archive, and what at first seemed like a hindrance actually turned out to be a positive development. I was forced to be more creative and resourceful, hunting through images and challenging my memory to find an elusive element that I knew was there somewhere. So I started using a collage technique to build the image that I might have otherwise created in the camera on location. I'd used digital collage during my residency at Palazzo Monti, when I made a series of tondos based on frescoes in the Palazzo and inspired by some tondos that I'd seen at Palazzo Fortuny in Venice. So I think the process was a natural progression using the digital collage, but perhaps it would not have happened at that time if not for the pandemic. So maybe just to backtrack a little, I've collected an enormous archive of what I call base images while spending extended periods of time in Greece. I photograph the locations and the figures, which are sometimes myself, similar to Wake and the other underwater series, and then sometimes other people as well, in response to the place. And then I work out the narrative over time later in the studio. So once I'm back in the studio, I look through my photographic archive, sometimes searching for a specific location. And then I'm taken back to the place where I photographed the original images. It almost takes me back there in my mind, to the feeling of that place. And so those images are images that I will ultimately deconstruct and reconstruct into real and imagined scenarios. It's like a strange form of time travel. And suddenly I think I can almost feel the negative ions from the sea. And then the process starts to take over and the real work begins. I digitally collage bits and pieces together. And the final images end up directly printed on metal or sometimes on paper, and also has bespoke light boxes. I've also been animating some of the images with particular aspects of the image remaining static and frozen in time, while other parts move subtly in the wind or are rained down upon in a torrential downpour. Cinema has also affected how I construct these images in the sense of developing a series of images that work together in a non-linear narrative. I also want the scene to feel familiar, but at the same time foreign. I play with light and space to elicit a sense of the uncanny. This is something that I believe that I was first attracted to as a child while I was watching films. I can recall suddenly becoming aware that the otherworldly night scene on the screen was actually shot in daylight using the day for night technique. And although I don't use that exact technique, I do employ the aesthetic experience of it. I'm sure beach scenes in films like Fellini's Juliet of the Spirits or La Dolce Vita or the final end of the world scene in Lars von Trier's Melancholia have influenced me in some way. The beach is neither land nor sea. It's a constant and yet constantly changing. It is often a place of naked truth in films, of judgment, a site of initiation into consciousness. And then in von Trier's film, the three characters are all waiting for the end of the world. One is crying, one is perhaps in shock or maybe accepting. Another almost seems indifferent. And I love that kind of tension. It's something I strive for in my work, and in particular, the Situations series.
Oh, I find that such an interesting point. I didn't even think about that connection of basically the symbol or the symbolism of the beach within the cinematic. And I think that that's a really interesting thing. And
yes,
yeah. I was just thinking as you were describing it with the bespoke light boxes or printed on metal or also through animation, thus presented in a digital way. I was just thinking how wonderful it would be to see all of these different works presented in their different forms. I have a penultimate question. Because you use technology in your creative process, what value do you see in expanding your work by providing a new or an extended context with NFTs?
Good question. Since part of my practice involves moving images, and really I'm kind of obsessed with them right now, and I've had a lifelong fascination with the intersection of art and technology, NFTs seem particularly interesting to me. I bought my first NFT in March of 2021 and have acquired more since then. And in relationship to my own work, I've been making moving images for a long time, but the concept of a moving image was always a challenge to convey to my collectors who are mostly familiar with my physical works. And so it was often suggested that my moving images were something that could be exhibited, but maybe not sold or given away for free or posted on social media. And I've done all of those things. However, NFTs seem like they might be the solution to connecting with collectors who are more interested in or perhaps more fascinated by the moving image. So I'm really looking forward to exploring this opportunity for creativity and dissemination. I'll have some NFTs available on a new platform called Rialto in a few months when it launches.
Okay, that's really interesting because I know that, I mean, the art world is quite split, isn't it, in terms of NFTs. Some people, when they hear NFTs, they want to have a discussion about it. Some people, when they hear NFTs, they want to run the other way. And I think that it's really, really interesting to hear from an artist how it has had a positive impact on your relationship with your collectors, on the success of, for example, disseminating your work in a way that's also not giving away your work for free. I think that that's also a really, really important thing to say. And so that's a really wonderful way in which NFTs has impacted that part of your career, which is great to hear.
Yes, I agree. You know, quite often there's a misunderstanding maybe about what NFTs are or what they can do. And, you know, for instance, some platforms now are, you know, connecting NFTs to physical works, which Rialto will be doing that. That's part of their thing, is they're a platform that focuses on artists who already have an established artistic practice. And they'll be offering digital as well as physical works with an NFT attached to them, because an NFT is essentially a receipt of ownership. So there are a lot of different kinds of opportunities for artists to work within that, you know, find the right spot for them and work within it.
I think that that's really fabulous. So I have one final question, and this is something that I love to ask all of my guests here on the podcast, because it's a bit of a fun one. If you could pick one artist from art history to have dinner with, who would it be and why?
I think I would choose Leonor Fini, the Argentinian-born Italian surrealist, painter, designer, illustrator, and author, known for her depictions of powerful and erotic women. She was arguably the most ferociously and heroically independent woman artist of the 20th century. Leonor never accepted the label of woman artist, however, and likewise never considered herself a surrealist. She never sacrificed her independence to the surrealist movement and abhorred their misogynistic views. Nevertheless, her works have been included in nearly every major surrealism exhibition from 1936 to the present, and most recently as a part of the Milk of Dreams exhibition at the Venice Biennale this year. Leonora Fini is such a fascinating persona to me. In addition to painting, she illustrated over 50 books, I think, including Satyricon, and wrote 3 novels. She designed costumes for ballets and Fellini's film 8½. She lived her life like an actor in a play, I think, creating a persona of drama, mystery, and intrigue. Some of the photographic portraits of her are simply amazing, with masks and incredible costumes. The list of people that she knew and collaborated with or who were influenced by her over the years is a remarkable inventory of the thinkers and artists of the 20th century. People like Jean Cocteau, Man Ray, Leonora Carrington, Salvador Dali, Joseph Cornell, Dora Maar, Albert Camus, Federico Fellini, the list goes on. So I can imagine that Leonor Fini would have some interesting stories to tell. When I was an artist in residence in Valaris in the south of France, I had the opportunity to visit the studio and home of John Durbel. And Durbel was assistant to Picasso in the famed Madura workshops in Valaris. And he was also an accomplished artist in his own right. And while visiting Mr. Durbel's home, he showed me personal photo albums full of images of costume parties with extravagant cakes and eccentric food and people like Picasso and Jean Cocteau and François Gillot, among others, including Leonor Fini. It was magical. The photos were incredible. And when I met him, Mr. Durbel was about 83 years old. He was nearly blind, but he was still making incredible ceramic works. As I was introduced to him that morning, he asked if he could touch my face to see me.
That's just absolutely amazing to hear your answer. And I completely and wholeheartedly understand why she is the one that you would want to go have dinner with, because not only would it be super fun and hopefully there would be eccentric food and drink and maybe you'd meet Jean Cocteau, but also to talk to Leonor Fini and to hear about what inspired her works, just to see what goes on in her brain. I think that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, and her incredible determination and, clarity of her convictions, I think, you know, really, really, I just find her very fascinating person.
That concludes my questions, which means that concludes the episode. So thank you so, so much for coming on and taking the time to record this and for answering all of my questions.
It was an absolute pleasure, Alexandra.
And that is it for today on All About Art. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave me a rating or a review, as it helps more people discover the show. Also, feel free to share with your friends, or if you share on social media, tag me and get in touch. Thank you so much for listening.